Are you ready for a change? Have you been stuck in something that you want to stop? Is your past continuing to sabotage your present? Sometimes we need an intervention to help us recognize what's enslaving us and that we can find freedom. God is always ready to intervene to help free us from our captivity. God has shown us the way to freedom. In one way or another, we all need God's intervention.
Intervention. When God intervenes on our behalf, doing what we could not do for ourselves. When God intervenes, he changes hearts and lives and families and communities, because when God intervenes, he changes everything as he moves us from dark to light, from death to life, from broken and in bondage to whole and free. And that is exactly what we've been talking about in this series, Intervention. That it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Amen? If you're here for the first time, or if you're just tuning in, I want you to consider this. Have you ever felt stuck? Trapped? Weighed down? Unable to change? Unable to move forward? If so, this series is for you. My name is Rebecca, and I'm new on the teaching team here at Pantano. You may be more familiar with my husband. He's up here every week leading worship, playing the guitar. He's got a beard, right? Yeah, we can give him a hand. He's awesome. He is amazing, but clearly I'm the brains of the operation, obviously. Our family has been so incredibly grateful for the opportunity to be part of this Pantano community for the past 3 years. And we're so grateful for the way that you have invited us in to your homes, to your families, and to your lives. One of my favorite things about Pantano is that this is a community of grace, that we value truth and honesty. And so if you're new to Pantano, I want you to know this, that you're welcome here. That you belong, and that you are loved just as you are, even if it's messy. Because that's exactly what this idea of intervention is about, that even in our brokenness, that God will meet us there. What a beautiful reminder and a beautiful promise. Today we're going to look at what gets in the way of our freedom, and we're going to jump right into the book of Luke as we explore freedom through forgiveness. But first, I want to give you a little bit of background on Luke. There are four gospels, which are simply four accounts of the life of Jesus. And Luke is one of those gospels, and each gospel is a little bit different. And the book of Luke includes 24 parables, which are simply short stories. And when we read the gospels, we see that Jesus frequently communicates using these parables, because it's a disarming way to communicate deep spiritual truths, and because there is power in story. Let's turn to Luke 15. You can follow along with the Bibles we provide you on page 713. If you're watching online, there will be a link for you there. We're going to look at a parable about a man and his two sons, and maybe you haven't heard this story before, but if you've grown up in church, it's likely you've heard it your entire life. That you know exactly where this story goes and how it ends. But my prayer for today is that our hearts would be open, our minds would be open to see something new. Because I believe that God wants to speak something new to us. Because often it's our familiarity with a passage that can prohibit us from living deeply into its truths. Because there is value in approaching the scripture as a learner. So before we look at this parable, let's look at what prompts Jesus in this moment to respond by telling this story. Luke describes what's taking place in the first few verses in chapter 15, verses 1 through 2. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners, and eats with them. So let's imagine this scene, because so often we read quickly and we miss the depth of what is happening. What is Jesus doing here? He's challenging the status quo. So Jesus, surrounded by this group referred to as tax collectors and sinners. This was a motley crew. These were thieves, liars, adulterers, the morally lowest of society. Those typically excluded, outcast, marginalized in that society. And we can all imagine who that would be today. And this is a group that frequently followed Jesus around. And so when I imagine the scene, it's as if they're pressing in, hanging on every word that Jesus is saying. And on the fringes, on the outskirts, are the Pharisees, the religious elite, the scribes, the esteemed of that day. And as they're looking on, they are offended by what they're seeing. Don't miss that this is an insult, a slander, that Jesus welcomes sinners and eats with them. But the beauty of the Christ that we serve is that he did not consider this an insult. In fact, he does not reject the sinner, he embraces them. He himself said, "I did not come for the healed, but for the sick." And so in this parable, in this Luke, in this situation that's taking place here, what happens is Jesus responds to these insults by telling three parables, all with the same meaning. Why three? We're not certain, but I can imagine Jesus, in his mercy, understood that they weren't getting it, that he wasn't getting through, so he just kept trying. And we're going to focus on the third parable, what is ultimately an invitation from a father and the greatest intervention of all. Let's pick it up in verse 11, page 714. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to him, to my father, and say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." If you know me, you know I love parties, and I can imagine this was a wild event celebrating this young son's return. Religion, the kind that excludes, the kind that says who's in and who's out, often uses this parable as an example of what not to do. And though it is a picture of our brokenness, it is so much more than that too. This parable is often referred to as the parable of the prodigal son, and prodigal is defined as recklessly extravagant. And certainly there is a recklessness to this young son's actions. Verse 12, he says, "Father, give me my share of the estate." This prodigal asks for his inheritance early, which is profoundly disrespectful in that culture. But honestly, it's profoundly disrespectful in this culture. I can't imagine approaching my own father and asking him for my share of the inheritance, my share of the estate while he is still alive. That's exactly what this young son did. It's as if he was wishing his father dead. But before you dismiss him as arrogant and selfish, I want you to see that this is a picture of our hearts. That in our brokenness and in our offense, so often we hurt and offend others. We say things we don't mean. We act in ways that don't line up with our values, that don't reflect who we truly are. And that's what's happening here with this young son, that in his pain, in his brokenness, he chooses to betray and reject his father. Verse 13 says that the younger son set off for a distant country and there squandered his wealth in wild living. So we all see this train wreck coming. This is what you call a predictable plot, like a chick flick or a Nicholas Sparks book. There is zero surprise in this story. This is where it's headed. And when a famine comes over the land, this young son's dream turns into a nightmare as he finds himself desperate and lost, literally living with the pigs and envious of their slop. This parable is a metaphor for our lives. I'm certain this young son's sin broke his father's heart, just as our sin breaks God's heart. As we live life on our own terms, without knowledge or awareness of God, without recognizing our need for God. And maybe that's where you find yourself today. Running from God, chasing pleasure, trapped in sin like chains, desperate and hopeless, in need of an intervention. But I want you to see something interesting here, that when the younger son finally comes to his senses and decides to go back to his father, he says, I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. This son is so full of sin and shame and self-contempt, convinced that he's not good enough. That the best that he can do now is get hired on as a worker on his father's farm. And that's what sin does. It causes us to forget who we are. That's what the enemy does. He attacks our worthiness and our identity. And haven't we all been here before? Full of shame, convinced we're not good enough. I don't know how long this young son decided how long he stayed with the pigs. But I know that it was shame that kept him from coming back sooner, because that's exactly what shame does. It keeps us distant and it keeps us broken, and we end up living out what we most believe about ourselves. And our shame becomes our bondage, our chains. Pain and trauma and suffering, whether the result of our actions or someone else's actions toward us, can cause us to doubt who God is and to doubt who we are because of God. In my day job, I'm a therapist, a counselor, which is to say that I make people incredibly uncomfortable at dinner parties. The answer to the question I always get is no. I'm not analyzing you. But because I'm a therapist, I have the incredible honor of sitting with people in their pain, in their moments of brokenness. And I recently had a man in my office, and he was sharing regret from his past, decisions that he had made, mistakes that he had made decades ago. And he was visibly distraught, broken over the impact that these decisions had made. And this is a man who loves God, who desperately wants to honor God. And I looked at him And I asked this question. I said, do you believe that God can forgive you? And his answer surprised me because there was no hesitation. He said, I believe that God can forgive me, but I'm not sure that he should. That's what shame does. That's what the enemy does. And how many of us have felt that way before? And so often it's our inability to forgive ourselves that gets in the way from our ability to receive the forgiveness that God is offering, the forgiveness that brings freedom. But what if God's intervention means he doesn't simply want to restore us from our sin? He wants to deliver us from our shame. Because I believe that is the promise. That is exactly what God is offering. One of the things that I love about this story is that this son had to come home. What a perfect picture of God, that he is waiting for all of us, but he will not impose his will on us. He will wait until we come home. And it's clear when you read this passage that this son did not anticipate that his father would receive him back with open arms. To expect that kind of unmerited favor would have been entirely counterculture. But instead of the judgment he expected and honestly deserved, I can imagine that this young son was surprised when he was immediately met with the love and the mercy and the forgiveness of his father. When I imagine this scene, it's as if there was no hesitation, that this father must have been watching and waiting every day, anticipating at some point his son would return home. When we read this story with our own narratives, it can contradict what we believe about God, that he is an angry father standing on the porch who spots his angry and ungrateful, sinful son. But that is not the picture that Jesus is painting here, not at all. That this is a father who, the second he sees his son, takes off in this immodest abandon with tears in his eyes. And in this affectionate gesture, he grabs his son, he holds his son, he kisses his son. And before this son can even get his speech out, the speech that he prepared, this father responds in grace, completely undeserved. Grace. That's the picture of this father that we read here. And it's a beautiful picture of Christ's love for us. Whatever your story, whatever your past, whatever your shame, that God still loves you, that he is waiting for you. But just as this reckless son had to come home, he had to turn toward his father and he had to receive the love and the forgiveness that his father was offering, we also have to turn toward our father. To be fully free from the shame, from the regret of our past, from our sin, we have to fully receive the forgiveness and the love that God is offering because he is waiting for you. He's waiting for all of us to come home. You don't have to carry these chains anymore. If you've ever felt lost and broken and desperate, his love is waiting to welcome you home. Many of us will relate to this reckless son, but many of us won't. And maybe that's not where you're at in your life right now. But God didn't stop there. That's not actually where this story ends. I want you to see another character in this story. Luke 15, verse 25. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him, but he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." Verse 31, "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Do you sense the accusations toward the father in this passage? The judgment toward his younger brother? And there was plenty of truth to justify this older brother's response, his reaction. In fact, when you read this at face value, it seems that this older brother is the only logical one. The problem is that God's love, God's grace, God's forgiveness defies logic. It defies logic. The older brother wanted judgment, and his father's grace seemed to offer none. And again, it's understandable why he responded this way. I can imagine that he felt abandoned and betrayed by his younger brother, used and unappreciated by his father. But one of the great paradoxes is that in any moment we can stand as the one who is being hurt and the next the one who is inflicting hurt on someone else. And so just as this young son comes home and drops his chains, this older one is picking his up. It was almost as if incredulously he says, "How dare he come home? How dare he eat the food I labored over? How dare my father throw this rebellious son a party?" The older son is loyal. He's obedient. He's faithful. But he is motivated by duty rather than desire, by discipline, not delight. There was no relationship motivating him, no love guiding his actions. But don't miss this. I want you to see this, that the father, in his mercy, he leaves the party to beg his older son to come in. He pleads with him. He doesn't want him to miss out. Just as he ran after his younger son, now he is chasing after this older brother, intervening for him. Most of us don't want to see ourselves as this older brother, and that is, in fact, exactly who we are. You see, this is not the classic sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This older brother is escaping his pain through performance. This is the pull to the performance-based gospel. And I want to be clear that if your belief is that you can earn God's love or God's forgiveness because of your morality, your right actions, you don't understand God's love. You don't understand God's forgiveness. This is where so many of us live in the church, that we're not overtly bad, but we're working so hard to be good that we miss the point of redemption. We're working so hard to earn God's love that we miss God in the process. And in fact, it can be our pride, as Glenn talked about last week, that can keep us from recognizing our need for God. And one of the greatest tragedies is that we can come to church week after week and not allow God to change our hearts, not allow the truth of the gospel or the work of the cross to transform our hearts and our lives. And that is an incredible tragedy. This older brother is a picture of the Pharisees. It seems clear that Jesus is speaking directly to them with the older brother. But if I'm honest, it's not simply a picture of what was happening 2,000 years ago when Jesus shared this parable. This older brother, he's a picture of my own heart. My own self-righteousness, when I feel like I don't get what I deserve from God. When I feel like I'm suffering unnecessarily. When I feel like God's favor is on someone else and not on me, I am the older brother. And my heart is just as broken in my sin. I'm just as lost, just as desperate, just as trapped in my chains, but even scarier, I don't always recognize my need. Tim Keller, a nationally known pastor and author, says it this way: the irony of the gospel is that the only way to be worthy of it is to admit that you're completely unworthy. What a beautiful reminder that our faith is dependent on Christ alone, not on us. That God intervened for us, doing what we could not do for ourselves. As I began to study this parable, I realized that this is my story, that this is our story. That in one moment we may be this reckless young son running from God, chasing pleasure. And in the next, we are the older brother, full of pride, full of self-righteousness, full of judgment. This is our story. And we are all in need of an intervention. The younger son is only free as he comes home and accepts the generous forgiveness that his father is offering. But this older brother seems to stay trapped in a prison of his own making. You see, to be fully free, we have to fully receive. And the beauty in this parable is that both sons are invited into the extravagant love of God. It's clear that the younger son accepts. We're not sure that the older one does, but what we know is that the same grace is being extended, the same forgiveness is being offered, that both sons are invited to take their seat at the table, free from these chains. We're all faced with this challenge of receiving the love and the forgiveness of God and allowing it to change us. I want you to hear from a good friend of mine, Desi Goodwin. I want you to hear how God intervened in her life, how she came to the place of receiving the love and the forgiveness of God, and how she found freedom.
Being lost was an understatement. My story really started when I was in my early 20s, and just through a series of just painful areas of my life, I already found myself in a failed marriage and with a daughter that I couldn't even raise because I was so addicted to drugs. Once feeling like a huge failure and just areas of my life that I thought that would just be a given, being married, having children, and then walking out of that, being now an addict, I felt like I had no hope. And I surrounded myself with a lot of people that also had no hope. There was nobody in my life at that time, the community that I was around, that that pulled me up. It was always pulling me down because they themselves were lost in the bondage of their own sin themselves. The lowest point in my story is when I found out that I was pregnant in the height of my addiction. I had already failed at being a mom, and I couldn't fathom taking care of another human being when I couldn't even take care of myself. I had a lot of shame, and I really took on the identity of where that shame was, that I had no value, that I had no place in this world. I wanted to fix the problem. I thought that there was no other choice than to have an abortion. I thought it was the most responsible thing to do, given that I already had felt like I failed as a mom, and I was in no place to take care of another human being. This was the point in my life that I needed a serious intervention. Even though I was not a believer when I had the abortion, I knew what I had done was wrong. My mother had never stopped praying for me, and I knew that it was probably her prayers that eventually led me to making that step and believing in God, believing in something bigger than I was. When I became sober, she took me in to her home, and she brought me back. She was raising my daughter at the time, so I was able to just have God restore my identity and as a mom and as a daughter. Through the process of many years of recovery and healthy people helping me grow, I was able to accept that I was forgiven by Jesus for all of the horrible things that I've ever done to hurt myself and others. I was able to work through steps in forgiving the people that have hurt me and along the way, the people that I have hurt. I learned to forgive myself, which was the hardest part to accept. I had to realize that I was not a slave to sin, but a daughter of a king. God continues to restore my life and use my story in many ways. I am married with a beautiful family. I work as a pregnancy center director and speak to women facing unplanned pregnancies. And I also work in post-abortion recovery. In addition to the work I do in the pregnancy center, I am a mentor to men and women that have been abused, addicted, and facing hardship through a transitional program that I lead. God continues to use my story to help others find freedom from the chains and bondage that they are carrying. So like the prodigal son, I was once lost, but now that I'm found, I am free.
If you were impacted by Desi's story, I want to invite you. She will be in the courtyard at a table after the service. She will be there. She would love to connect with you, to support you, to encourage you, and she will have information about an abortion recovery support group that she's offering in the fall. But I want you to hear this, that whatever your story, wherever you're at today, God still loves you. That he is waiting on you. He is waiting on you to come home. In Desi's story and in this parable, God is giving us a beautiful picture of who he is, his illogical and ridiculous love toward you and I. And because of that love, God sent his son, Jesus, to die on a cross. And because of his death on the cross and because of his resurrection 3 days later, he is inviting us in to forgiveness. He is inviting us into grace. And because of that forgiveness, we are free. We are free. We don't have to carry these chains anymore. But to fully be free, we have to fully receive. God has done the work. Now it's our part. It's on us. We have to receive the love and the forgiveness that he is offering. I want to invite you to stand all over this room. God is offering freedom, freedom from shame, freedom from self-contempt, freedom from judgment, freedom from self-righteousness, freedom from our pride, freedom from addiction. It is here and it is available, and God is waiting for you. He is waiting for you. And so maybe you see yourself as this reckless young son, and you need to know that God hasn't given up on you. Don't believe the lie of the enemy. Don't believe the shame. You are loved, and you are good enough because of what Christ has done. That our identity is as a son and a daughter of Christ. That is the truth. But maybe you're the older brother. You know what you need to hear? God is waiting for you too. That this invitation is for you. That there is freedom for you. That God is crazy in love with you, and it's not because of anything you've done. It's because of who he is, because he is love. Here's the truth of the gospel, that there is nothing that cannot be forgiven, and there is no one undeserving of forgiveness. In a moment, we're gonna sing, but I wanna invite you to pray with me. And I want to pray for you, but I'm going to ask you if you feel comfortable just to hold your hands in front of you in this posture of receiving. And as I pray for you, whatever way you feel comfortable, I want you to acknowledge your need for God, your need for God's forgiveness, your need for God's grace, for the freedom that he is offering. Because he is here and he has done the work. And now it's our turn to receive it. God, I thank you for your love. I thank you for the truth of your love, that you are crazy in love with each one of us. God, that even in our moments of brokenness, even in our mess, you never stopped loving us. God, may we be rooted in that love. May we know how high, how deep, how wide, how long your love is for each one of us. May we feel that today. God, we confess our need for you. We recognize our sin. We recognize the work of the cross, that because of that work, we receive the love and the forgiveness that you are offering. And God, for any of us that feel stuck, feel trapped, unable to change, God, bring freedom. May we live as sons and daughters, fully into our identity. May we take our seat at your table. May we live in that freedom. I started today by saying that this was referred to as the parable of the prodigal son. Prodigal, defined as recklessly extravagant. But I want you to see that this is not a parable of a prodigal son. Not at all. This is a parable of a prodigal God and his reckless, extravagant love for you and I.